So welcome to the Fostering Potential webinar number 3. My name is Susan Saw. I'm the project manager for the Fostering Potential program. I'm really pleased to introduce Laura Stagg, who's an achievement coach for Achievement for All. So if I hand over to Laura now.
I'll do a quick intro to me while those slides come up. So my background is primary teaching and learning leadership. I've been working with Achievement for All for about 7 years now and was part of the London Fostering Achievement Programme. During that time, around 2014-2015, we actually conducted a STEAP analysis, and that will be our basis for the content today. So the main aims of the session are to share with you what STEAP analysis is, so you understand the purpose and process of it, to consider some of the barriers and solutions that were raised during it, and then also for you to have time to reflect on your role and what you can take from those solutions to improve outcomes for children who are looked after. So during 2014-15, we conducted a STEAP analysis. It was really around looking at the barriers to children who looked after to achieving. It's a really effective way to pinpoint barriers, and it's very much about getting all stakeholders' views in place. So it's very much a multi-agency working in a structured format for that. So in terms of STEAP, it's an acronym and it stands for social, technical, educational, environmental and psychological. So the social factors that we looked at in terms of barriers and solutions were around anything that could relate to the child's social environment and their lifestyle as well. Technical was around use of technology and information. The educational were mainly things based around their school or college environment. Environmental around the physical spaces in which the young person lives. And then the psychological were the psychological circumstances of the child and young people. So the information we collected during the STEAP analysis was then used to establish ways to overcome barriers. So we conducted the STEAP analysis in 2014-15. It was a LIFT project team, and we did 20 STEAP sessions, which helped analyse the barriers that children who looked after might face, and then also come up with some solutions as well. It's a multi-agency approach. So during the sessions, we have primary schools, secondary schools, virtual schools, foster carers, social workers, and of course children looked after as well. So it's about getting everybody's views together in terms of what potential barriers are to achievement and working together to find solutions as well. So in terms of STEAP, it is an acronym, and so it stands for, so it stands for social, technical, educational, environmental and psychological. So the social is very much around the lifestyle experienced by the children or the young person. The technical is around the IT and access to technology. Educational is mainly the elements within the school or college environment. Environmental are the physical spaces in which the young person lives. And then psychological are the psychological circumstances that children, young people face. So it's very much finding out what the barriers are and then looking at possible solutions. So we can share now the STEAP analysis. It's been broken down to a lovely poster format. So we'll just try and upload that onto the screen so you can see it. It's available also on the... So there was 10 main areas that came up during the STEAP analysis. And some of them are specific to foster carers. Some are more specific to schools, some are for social workers, some for virtual schools. So I'm doing it today very much in focus around foster carers. But some of them might have an educational element, but then it's still really important for you to know that as well. So you can go in and challenge schools and colleges to really talk about, are they doing those things as well? So the 10 common areas of hearing the voice of the child, effective use of key workers, removing the stigma, transition points, home and school, support and understanding, the foster carer, effective social workers, the school setting, and then effective systems as well. So we're just going to work through them and talking about the barriers that have come up. Please do type questions as we go along, so we'll have time at the end to go through those as well. So hearing the voice of the child, it's not just because we know we need to have people's voice, we actually know the effect on children and young people when they don't feel they have a voice. So to not feel heard really does affect their feelings and their value and self-worth as well. So not just only important to get their views, but also to make sure that they feel heard as well. So a lot of these are around school points. Again, it's how you can support the school and your children and young people to make sure that they do have a voice in school as well. So being the experts on the children and knowing how they need support at transition points, knowing how they need to maintain friendships and communicating that to school is really important. So the school has a really good understanding as to how they can support people's voice for that as well. Lots of ideas in terms of gaining pupil voice, particularly before a PEP or during a PEP, or during any other meetings as well. So it could be that the children, young people keep a reflective diary so they can almost prepare themselves to talk, making sure they're contributing to any passports or profiles they have as well. And then a lot of schools are starting to look at more creative ways to get pupil voice in PEPs as well. So I know some schools have done things such as they can record their voice before they go into the meeting so it's played. They might have done some visual or mind mapping things with the children, young people prior to the meeting so they're prepared. Rather than just going into the meeting a little bit sort of cold and not really knowing what to say. Some schools have chosen to ask children and young people to go and find pieces of learning or achievements they're proud of and start the meetings that way. So in terms of your support for that, I guess it's really challenging the school and making sure that they are supporting the young people and children to have a voice in PEPs. Maybe time after a PEP to reflect with the designated teacher and, you know, talk about how much your voice did, you know, the young person and child have in that meeting, and how can we improve that really as well. And then conversations at home with you are key as well. So daily conversations over dinner about what they've learned, what they've been doing at school, how they're achieving, how they're feeling about things as well, friendships. And I know some parents and carers struggle with that, you know, especially as they get older and you kind of get the answer, so, oh, I don't know, I didn't do anything at school today, or they just talk about lunchtime. And again, getting the school to support with that. So it could be that they send home a piece of learning or an achievement they've had that week, and that's the dinner conversation for that evening. Sometimes it's not always over dinner as well. Sometimes it's, you know, when they're distracted doing a walk around the shops or something like that, and you can just chat to them. But staying in touch for things like that is really important. In terms of things schools can do again, so it could be something that you suggest to talk about with the school. Philosophy for Children came up as one really good solution. It's an approach that schools can use as a learning opportunity where all children in the classroom have time to speak and listen. They respond well to each other, they're taught how to respond, and they talk about some quite sort of deep thinking areas. So it could be another suggestion you have for the school. And then asking them, what kind of advocate role does my child or young person have in the school? Are they on the school council, for example? Are they an ambassador? Are they part of a mentoring programme? Because all schools will have these sort of leadership advocate roles in the school. And I think it's really important to champion your children, young people, and say, you know, what opportunities are there for them to be able to be on that board and have that conversation and lead an area? It's really important. And it gives the children, young people, a really good sense of responsibility as well if they know they've got that role. It's great for attendance as well. If children, young people aren't keen on going to school, if they know they need to go and mentor a year seven on a Monday, much more engaged in going to school that day. In terms of key workers then, so this is again something that all that schools can do, but again it could be something that you talk to them about. If they have a designated person that they want to talk to, it says on here it could be people who might be trained or have particular understanding and time, most importantly, to be able to work with yourself and the young people. But I think also relationships are really important, so talking to your children, young people, about who it is they have a really good relationship with in school, who is it they go to, and always having that as a key person that you share all the information with it that you need to on a day-to-day basis as well. It gives that one person that kind of oversight. They can be thinking about things that are coming up all the time, knowing where the key, you know, tricky areas could be during a typical day or a typical week or term as well. It could be that you ask the school if they set up some kind of buddy system, especially if it's a new school or a transition point as well, making sure they've got someone in school they can turn to. And I think importantly for you as well, it's the first point of contact for you to go to as well if you want any support or concerns, or if you need signposting as well, rather than, you know, certainly in bigger schools where you've got a whole range of people you can go to. And this is very different in the schools that I work in. It's very different in each school. Sometimes it's the pastoral team, sometimes it's the welfare team, sometimes it's a particular subject teacher that the child or young person just has a really strong relationship with and feel they can talk to, and sometimes it's the form tutor or class teacher. So again, it could be that you talk to your child, young person first, about who it is they thought they can go to in school and talk to. This is a really hard barrier, and it's hard to find solutions to, I think, but I think it's a really important one to address. So removing the stigma of children looked after. Children looked after don't like the label, they don't like people knowing, and it does have a direct impact on their self, of sense of self and their emotional well-being as well. So that's why no solution really is simple. But some of the solutions that we did come up with as a team was the use of language in particular. There is a link at the end of the presentation. It's quite a recent piece of research that's come out, getting children looked after's voice on the language that they do and don't like people using around them. I think it's got foster carers on there as well. It's got some foster carer voice as well. So I'll share that link for you. It's a really good, nice piece of reading in terms of what language we should be using. And again, I think it's perfectly acceptable and really good idea to share that with schools as well, if you feel that in the meeting they're not using the right language. So I think it's really important. Availability of role models, so making sure they can have people they're aspiring to, and a real variety within that as well. Showing your pride and satisfaction in your role, I think that's a really lovely solution as well. Show that you're really proud to be a foster carer, and to be a family, and sharing that as well. And I think from some foster carer ones that I've done before as well, maybe some stigma that you might find as well in terms of being a foster carer. I know some situations where if the behaviour has been particularly tricky, you might feel some judgments on you for that. So I think it's really important to educate them and the communities about how fostering works, and for all parents in the school and carers to understand that, so you've got that shared understanding, and you don't feel that stigma for you or your child looked after. Transition points is another really big one that came up actually, for foster carers and for children looked after and for schools as well. And it doesn't just refer to the big transitions, such as primary to secondary. It was around year-to-year transitions. It was around social worker changes, home placements as well, and sometimes day transitions as well. So when we look at data around detentions and behaviour and exclusions, very often the behaviour issues will come up straight after lunch because they're transitioning from that social period back into structure. Very often during the year, tricky transition points were around Christmas because it's that family time and it might bring up different memories for them and difficulties as well. So I think you having that knowledge of your child or young person and being able to share when you know tricky transition points could be and getting the school to preempt that is really powerful. In terms of the bigger transitions, so particularly primary to secondary and different homes as well, memory boxes have been really effective. And again, it's that preempting it. It's not, the last week of term putting together a few bits and bobs from the school. It's collecting it, over hopefully that whole of the end of year six and thinking about all the things that might be particularly pertinent for that child to be able to take forwards with them. In terms of being able to visit new schools and meet key staff prior to starting, most children should have that anyway, but what we need to do, I guess, in addition for children looked after is making sure they have enough of that as well. So it might be that they have an extra day, or they meet an extra person, or maybe they meet with children, you're accompanying them. So anything in above and beyond that the school can do is really important to that. So again, it's just you challenging the school on that and saying, what else can we do though? What else do we need to put in place for them? What are the potential barriers that they might face during that transition? And also, I always say as well, transition isn't just what you do before, it's what you do during and after as well. So very, very often, we do all that lovely transition work, in the summer for year sixes, maybe even over summer holidays as well, putting together all the plans, such as doing the route to school, getting the uniforms ready, looking at the timetable, familiarising yourself with things. But then it's really important also, we don't forget the transition actually happens in that September, October time, and we have to keep that going as well. So again, I know a lot of primary schools who've been more than happy to go and do follow-up visits in October, November, to say, we agreed this, this and this would happen, part of the transition, how is that going? And meeting with the child as well. And the child loves the fact that, the primary school teacher's coming back to visit them as well, see how it's going, see them in their uniform, and share all the things that are going really well. So again, just raising that at meetings, transition meetings, pets, parent evenings, and saying, what else can we do for this transition to make sure it's really successful? And again, choosing, again, I think this comes up in quite a few of the solutions, making sure that children and young people are choosing work and rewards they're proud of and sharing those as well. And then the last one, making sure that they have time to be able to say goodbye to important people as much as possible. Certainly in transit schools, it might not be that they're changing, it might be that their class is changing possibly. So a lot of other children might be leaving. And again, just being aware of that and how that makes them feel, if, you know, friends have left school and things. So this was a really interesting one. So home and school, we've got two sections to this. So a lot of the solutions that you can apply at home also applied at school as well. So it sounds really obvious, but having a welcoming school and home environment. Mm-hmm. So, and that's very personal, I think, and different for every family and every school. But just challenging that again, if you don't feel that you know, you are welcomed, because the people who are in the front office in schools in particular, that's often the face and the people that you see in the school. So making sure that they are welcoming you and saying hello, and then modelling that at home, obviously, as well. High expectations, so that absolute belief in your young person or child that they will be happy and fulfilled, and not accepting anything less and challenging that with the school despite any circumstances, helping them to achieve their high aspirations as well within that. And then BB comes of consistency, and that's something that I really drum in with my teachers in particular in terms of managing behaviour, routines as well, being that really consistent person they can go to. So you can see how those things both mirror at home and at school. So it's a nice way. Frequently and routinely giving rewards and praise, and I think that's very personal as well. Obviously all schools will have their own approach to reward systems and how they praise as well, but it's really important for you to know what that is. So do ask schools or go on their websites and have a look at what their behaviour policy is, or talk to a key worker or a form tutor or designated teacher about how they reward and praise children. And also talk to your child and young person about rewards and praise. You know, some children are happy to get a sticker at school, others just really want to be told that they've done well and know why they've done it. You might have some children, young people, who find it really hard to get praise as well. So I know I've worked with some schools where the children really don't enjoy getting feedback in front of the whole class straight away, and so the teacher will just write a little post-it note for them, pop it in their book and says you can read that, you know, when you're ready to. So I think it's really important that we know what kind of rewards and praise children and young people want, and that it comes from a range of people as well, that it's not just coming from home, it's not just coming from school, there's a real balance to that as well. This one, an understanding of the principles of restorative justice, that might link into knowing what your behaviour policy is at school as well and how they deal with those, any incidents or behaviour issues. So understanding that and supporting them maybe to look at their approach and how that works for children looked after in particular, and the needs they might have and conversations after behaviour issues. Safe use of ICT. So again, it's one to constantly be keeping going with, really. It's constantly changing, and there's constantly new apps coming out, new different networks and things, so just stay informed as much as you can. So most schools will have an e-safety week at least. Most schools will have somebody who leads on e-safety. So again, it might just be you getting that information from them about how best to support children, young people, any barriers that you've got, how it might affect them. And there's some really good resources online as well that the school can signpost you to make sure that your child and young people is using IT safely. And then the last thing we've got on this page is the Achievement for Structured Conversations. So that is very much something that Achievement for works with schools on, and it's training teachers on how to listen to parents and carers and young people. So rather than a typical parents meeting where we teachers would sort of talk at you and tell you how your child is doing, it's much more about saying, how do you think they're doing? You're the expert. How does the child think they're doing? What strategies and targets can we put together and how can we all work together? So although that is more for the school to do, you can definitely make sure that you've got your voice at parents' evening and your children and young people do as well. By saying, you know, preparing for them, knowing how they're doing, talking about their assessment of progress, their attainment, things that are worrying them, things they've achieved in, and then also, most importantly, what do they want to work on next? What is it they want to achieve next? So going into those parent meetings prepared is really important. Then this seems, yeah, so it says it might appear to be the scope of that saying, support and understanding. But actually, quite a lot of barriers came up because people weren't always supporting understanding. So some of these solutions was having really quality pastoral care. And I have to say, we did this in 2014-15, and this is really raised on the agenda for most schools now. Yeah. And it's improved massively, I think, because mental health and wellbeing has got such a high profile at the moment. Schools do generally have good pastoral teams or welfare teams, and the CPD going into those teams is much better than it used to be. Having said that, you know, it still always can be improved on. So I guess in terms of your role, it's knowing who the pastoral care team is, the welfare team, and how they can best support and understand your child, your person, and support you as well in terms of signposting you to any resources or workshops that would be useful. Obviously, you can see the trained teaching assistant to learning mentors is very much a school thing as well, and the need to understand mental health as well. So again, it could be that they're signposting you to resources. It could also be that you're signposting them to things as well if you think there's a better need for support and understanding. And again, this kind of taps into what the school's offering really in terms of asking what counselling or therapeutic support they might have. Lowering CAMS thresholds to make sure children get referred quickly, using educational psychologists. So I would say from a sort of school point of view that, you know, you would have to be the people to really push those sort of things and say, this is what my child or young person needs, this is why they need it. And then support the school as much as you can to get all of that support in. The last on the bottom is just PSHE curriculum as well. So that's personal, social and health education. Sometimes it might be called different things for different schools, but generally that's what they call it. So again, it might just be in a PEP meeting. If you think that your child or your person needs more support in that area, just ask them the school, what PSHE do they have within school? Do they use philosophy for children? Do they do circle times? Do they follow a particular scheme? And just understanding how they teach children and people about personal, social and health education. And then sharing your understanding of your child and whatever support or additional support they might need in that area. Okay, so in terms of barriers and solutions for foster carers, some specific ones. So knowing how to nurture and address attachment needs. So that might be CPD and reading support as well. Actively supporting your child's school. So parent carer support is the single most changeable factor in a child's achievement. And that doesn't mean having to know how to do long division and teach them it at home, I promise you. It's just conversations at home, most importantly, talking to them about their day, about how things are going, both academically and socially at school, what they're enjoying, what they want to achieve. It's definitely attending parents' evenings, school events, being there as their champion, and staying in touch with school as well and working in partnership with them. But I'd have to say that's one thing you take away from today, but I think that's the most important thing, is actively supporting within school as well. Nurturing talent or aptitude. So again, it might come up during PEP meetings or conversations around, you know, what their particular strengths are, not necessarily always academic either. It could be their social skills, it could be a particular talent they have or a skill. And really nurturing that. So it could be, you know, trips at the weekend, conversations, books, signposting them, any of those kind of things as well. One of the things that children look after as well is having a safe study space as well. So particularly if they're sharing space with other children or other young people, making sure they've got a laptop or some kind of study area they can access. And then again, talking to the school if that is a challenge and making sure the school knows about that. So a lot of schools might open the libraries up early in the morning and give some children passes to go into there. They might offer homework clubs or workshops, so anything like that, finding out what the school can offer and then being able to support it at home as well. And then proactiveness in terms of maintaining positive relationships. So that's obviously with yourselves, with the school and also with their friends. So, you know, any play dates or meetups we can do, any clubs they can attend at school, anything that helps them develop those and maintain those positive relationships is really important. Effective social workers, I'll just talk briefly about this, I'm aware of the time. But I think the most important one in terms of your role is being well informed about day-to-day school life. So that's where you can really keep them up to date with things that are going on, making sure that people's voice is getting through to them as well, and they understand the challenges, but also the successes they've had and the achievements, so everyone at Pepperviews can talk about those. In terms of the school setting, I think the main one I wanted to talk about here really, I guess the language one we talked about already, but knowing about their interests so they can access relevant clubs and activities. So your role there is really key in terms of being able to signpost schools about the clubs that they're running. Almost all schools would be very, very open if there isn't a club that's running and your child or young person would really like one, say it's a Lego club or slime club, whatever that might be. They're very open to hearing that, because even though it's just your child who might want it at the moment, once they sell that out to other children, actually the uptake will be huge. So yeah, please do share any interests that your children, young people have, and make those suggestions around clubs. And again, it's another really good way of getting children, young people attending school. You know, if they really hate maybe gym on a Friday and are avoiding going to school on a Friday, or a bit reluctant to go, if they know they've got football club at the end of the day or Lego club, then that's going to get them in, and that's going to be their hook as well. So that's a really nice one as well. And then just reinforcing again about teachers having training in attachment, mindfulness and restorative justice. And I guess just in terms of reassurance for you, I think that again is a lot higher profile than it used to be. Almost all of my schools have training annually now, I would say, in attachment, and most of them are moving towards sort of restorative justice approach for behaviour as well. This is a schools area again, but this is where you can help in terms of early identification of any gaps they might have in learning. So again, you've got that knowledge of the child, your own person, in terms of if they've been to different schools and moved around and they've got a gap in a particular area of their learning. You can help signpost them. You're the experts in your children, young people. It's the school's job to say what they can put in place to meet those gaps, but it's definitely something that you can do in terms of saying, I think this is the area they're going to need to work on as well. Making sure that schools are signposting specialist services to you as well, so asking them if there's anything you don't feel that's going that you know about. And then making schools welcoming places we talked about, and then dedicated careers advice, I think it's really important. So most children, young people have it from year nine, but you know, I strongly advise, you know, if you want to push for that a little bit more earlier on, then that's a really good way. There's no reason, you know, children as young as five often start talking about what they want to be when they grow up and developing, you know, sort of small pathways, but certainly from year seven they can have longer conversations around that. A lot of schools do prioritise children who are looked after for those meetings as well, so they should be first on the list to see careers advisors. They might have an extra meeting with them as well, so again, it's just making you aware of what schools can offer, so then you can ask for those things as well and say why you think they're really important. The last one was really around systems that are already in place. So systems are often a very good thing, but some of the systems can sometimes have some barriers as well. So PEPs in particular, improving them, children looked after, making sure they have a voice with them in particular, and then schools quality assuring the PEPs was sort of key part of that as well. If I go back to the PowerPoint quickly then, I can just show you a couple of links and then we'll take any questions that you've got from these barriers and solutions.